You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Orlando, Florida, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the MLS Digital HQ, presented by Wells Fargo. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Bobby Warshaw. Fine, David, what did I do wrong?
We have all these people you're scared to project. What was that? That was like a mouse.
Oh, my God.
Oh, from Orlando, Florida.
This has been, like, I leave for one vacation.
You're off your game.
Okay.
You're way Rudy.
Demand,
you went back to England.
Demand
you
better
back.
From me. Set the standard high, okay? And I will try to meet it. We have a big show coming up for you. This guy, Bobby Warshaw, who's... I don't know, you're looking a little nervous right now, but you did a great interview with Edwin Cirillo and Cole Bassett, yeah? A couple homegrowns?
Yeah, they were awesome. They were awesome.
What'd you talk about?
We talked about what it's like to be a first-year, second-year pro. We talked about playing center midfield. We talked about their mentors, and then a question about the homegrown game.
Okay, well, get to that in a little bit. Mark Anthony Kay is also going to stop by the MLS Digital HQ presented by Wells Fargo in just a little bit. We're going to talk to him about his life as a late bloomer, which I'm not sure I'm going to use that phrase with Mark Anthony, but I might, and we'll see how he reacts.
Do you think he's a late bloomer, or do you think everyone else just couldn't find him?
So here's the thing. I've actually read a lot of the articles that have come out this year on Mark Anthony Kay, and last year too, to be fair. And he's come out and said...
What percentage of soccer articles do you read?
Too damn high. It's the number, the percentage of soccer articles I read is too damn high.
But if it's about Mark Anthony Kay, it's even higher.
But he said, like, I think I got cut from Toronto FC because of my attitude. I think that I thought I had already earned it. And then when the hammer dropped, it kind of took him out of the blue, and he had to, I think, kind of bottom out and then climb back up. And I mean, look where he is now.
Well, now we'll ask him, Did you have a bad attitude?
You better have a good one when he gets here.
Yeah, we'll see. All right.
Look, this is the top.
Week 21, we will get to that as well. A lot of big results there. The standings are just mashed
together.
By the
way, Mark Anthony Kay literally just
walked
by.
No, he's not here yet. He will be here soon. The standings are mashed together. Other than LAFC,
he's
back here.
He's here. He just walked behind him.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's what happens when you're in the middle of a
That's why don't be
open
quiet.
Space.
Be loud.
Project. Let him know how
you're
feeling.
Let him know you're talking about him behind his back.
You're the star in this room, Wiebe.
Okay. I'll try to do my best. Let's talk about the All-Star Game. That's why we're here. Wednesday night is the match, 8 p.m. Eastern. MLS All-Star Game presented by Target at Exploria Stadium here in Orlando. FS1, Unimas, TSN, TV Sports. You know, this is some people might think of this as a diversion. And that's fair. That's really what it is. To me, it's more of a celebration. It's an opportunity for everybody to get together and see each other and
hobnob
a little bit, have a couple Heinekens, maybe a Trevento, buddy.
He's just going after Leagues Cup. He's going soft.
Really? Tell me why you like this week. Just tell me. Just take over for me, okay?
I've always been a sucker for All-Star Game, and I think it's really cool to bring the biggest stars in any league, right? Like, I watch all the All-Star Games. Baseball, I don't watch much baseball at this point. I don't watch much hockey.
Who won the Home Run Derby?
I didn't watch that.
Did you watch the All-Star Game?
I didn't this year.
Some dude hit like 75 home runs. Yeah.
I just want to test when
like
he said I watch every All-Star Game.
Hit like 75 home runs, but the other dude won it.
And there were also people saying the ball was juiced. I don't think the ball will be juiced at the Skills Challenge. I'm just throwing that out there. Continue. Sorry, we've interrupted.
What if it was juiced? What if it was juiced for the cross and ball?
I actually am into that.
That would be dope.
Juice the balls, please.
I like All-Star Games. I like bringing all the big stars together. I like bringing all the media together. I like the parties that come with it. I'm a fan of this stuff, Andrew.
You're an American. You like a big event.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There's nothing against that. It's good energy.
Don't be discharged.
It's always a good time. It's also cool because for us, we cover MLS so much, and it's fun being around those teams, but you bring a new team in. And last year was Juve, the year before Real Madrid. This year it's Atletico Madrid, which is led by the greatest manager in the history of the world, Diego Simeone. Diego Simeone asked me to do anything in the world, I would do it for him, especially if he was wearing all black. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see if he goes all black at Exploria Stadium. I'm also excited to see if he asked me, I don't know. I've played against Atletico Madrid in my life, so maybe he remembers that.
Wait.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
When I was 14 years old, I was over in Spain. We played an Atletico Madrid team. We only lost 1-0. Shout out to that. So I still have my jersey from then. So if he wants me to throw it on, maybe jump on the field, get like me sit next to Koke, maybe do extra work for Koke, cover a little bit of ground, something
maybe
like that.
How about just would press be the for suit? Simeone? You would be, you would be more of a box to box destroyer type
of
thing?
100%
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think he could get me to that level. That's how good a manager he is.
The three of us, I would count us as optimists, broadly speaking. You, I would count as a cynic.
No, I'm not so cynical. I've never been cynical.
Okay, so you're here at the All-Star Game. Sometimes you've resisted these trips.
It's
true. I don't want to call you out on that.
It's true.
But sometimes you've resisted these trips.
The email chain for booking our flights is very good.
I will say that my favorite part of the All-Star Game is going to a new town. I've never actually been to Orlando proper before. I went to Disney World when I was like seven. Going to a new town and experiencing the food. So at some point, there's a Colombian joint down the street.
Then
there's
a, finally.
Then there is a Latin Caribbean barbecue joint about a mile and a half northeast of us. They're going to do. I think we're going to try to hit that Turkish place that
Bosphorus.
Got recommended.
Yeah.
And our guys, the Cooligans, are here. And apparently, Alexis has like an A plus recommendation for what might be the best pizza in Florida. So we're going to have to try to do that as well. So I like anytime I get a chance to go and eat too much food with people that I mostly like.
Yeah, I was going to say marginally enjoy the company of.
Yeah. Like, yeah, don't get
mainly
sick
just
of
okay,
so we've
yeah.
got the human Yelp element out of yeah. this right now. Let's just get to the festivities here because it's not just about the game. It is about all the other hoopla. Tuesday, if you don't have tickets yet, they're $10. You can go to both the MLS Homegrown Game presented by Energizer as well as the MLS All-Star Skills Challenge presented by Target. The Homegrown Game speaks for itself. You guys have called this in years past. This year, 2DayNA has it on their channels. You can watch it in English on MLS Twitter. Of course, we'll talk to Edwin Cerillo and Cole Bassett here in just a little bit. The Skills Challenge is new, though, and that's what I'm most into. And we've kind of hyped it up on this show before we really knew what it was about. But now we know. I mean, Wayne Rooney, Carlos Vela, Jonathan Dos Santos, the stars don't get much bigger for the All-Stars. Nani, same deal. Chris Mueller. Ben Barrett would tell you he's the biggest
Cash.
Star in Major League Soccer. Sebastian Mendez there as well. And then Atletico Madrid. Ache, Hector Herrera, João Felix, Koke there. As you said, it touch and volley. Basically, your teammates hit it across. You try to do something special. Shooting, you have targets. You get points for it. Passing, there's moving targets, stationary targets. You get points. And then you get points also for flair. And your judges are Kaká, Alex Morgan, Alexi Lalas, Ocho Cinco, or Chad Johnson. I really can't figure out which one he's actually going
Chad
by. I think
it's Chad Ocho Cinco.
Really?
I think his online brand is Ocho Cinco.
It's
but
at
person,
Ocho Cinco, but his
Chad.
Title is Chad Johnson, so I don't know. Duelist is there as well.
Full name?
They can award flair points.
I want to see his business card.
Bobby, you handicapped this for MLSsoccer.com. Mm-hmm. You've done
this
a lot of analysis.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's going to win this?
Sometimes
thing?
You do content you're just extra proud of. You know, that was one of them.
Gotcha.
I just want to say we missed an opportunity by not talking about Doyle at Disneyland at 8-7. We need to come back to
no,
that.
I think we're good. For another day.
Let's come back to that. Yeah, I went through and I picked the nine players who were most likely to win each event. I thought some were a little bit more obvious than others.
Who's the MVP candidate here? Who's going to run away with this?
You have to say that Wayne Rooney is the early MVP, that he has the most complete skill set. He has the flair. We've already seen him do bicycle kicks. We've already seen him pick out the top corner from the PK spot, drive 70-yard clip balls on a dime. The wild card in this is João Felix.
Yeah.
$130 million signing from Benfica to Atletico Madrid.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know that number.
He really only has, what, three quarters of a year
at
top-level football? You don't actually – people think he's amazing, but we've seen this before. Players have really great years. So he's the wild card. He might win every event. We might find out he's not quite at a Wayne Rooney or Carlos Vela level, so that'll be the most interesting part to this.
And it's not a game. So this is strictly, like, skills, technique, ability in a – you know, no pressure, ball sitting right there. How can you strike it?
Bobby, let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. When you were a professional soccer player,
I think I would have won this.
How often and for how long after practice did you and your teammates, like how often does a team typically just devolve into this sort of thing once practice
naturally,
is done?
Yeah.
Yeah, like naturally. Yeah.
Every day. Now, some coaches, especially now, are more strict where they say, we've got a game this weekend. When we're done, no extra training. But yeah, pretty much every single day from Monday to Wednesday or Monday to Thursday after training, players split in. They play horseshoes. You guys know what horseshoes are? You put a cone down. I clip it to my teammate. You get one touch.
Yeah,
closer
one touch.
To the cone
closest, yep.
You play crossbar. You just have players. You have the wide players, the wingers, the outside back, cross it in, and the strikers and the midfielders finish it. You do PK challenges. Yeah, there's usually 7 to 8 players. Maybe if you're 20 games into a season and you're 30 years old, you don't do it anymore. But most good teams have 5 to 10 players
so
stay
if we were to toss you out there, let's say we were going to create an MLS
good skills challenge
player.
Let's say we're going to say
MLS
an extra. So Kalen's on this team. It's probably Keel Kalen. Charlie. Yeah. You got to put Charlie in there.
Yeah,
you guys, I hit a clean volley. I feel like I'm getting left out here. I could do that one thing.
Yeah.
I can hit a clean volley.
Well, if it's on to Simeone, you're in.
Yeah.
So if you take your team, your MLSsoccer.com team, into the skills challenge, and you get to choose the particular skill challenge.
Yeah.
You guys win it, you get $1 million.
Cross
what are you choosing?
Yeah,
cross volley.
Yeah, I feel really good about that.
You think you're going to compete with Wayne and Carlos Vela and Jonathan Dos Santos?
I'm just saying, I've got a mean side volley, Andrew.
Okay. So it's all about the crosser, though, there.
Well, Carlos De Los Cobos did try to make Kalen a fullback.
Sir.
So
put him on the wing,
right.
Baby. Put him on the
Give
wing.
Give him some Wendy's and roll him out.
He's coming back. One frosty and he's on top of it. 5 p.m. Eastern
Kalen's
on Tuesday. That's
shots.
The homegrown game
right
presented by Energizer. And 8 p.m. is the All-Star Skills Challenge presented by Target. You can watch the Skills Challenge basically everywhere. MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, Twitter, Twitch, Pluto TV, FoxSports.com, ESPN3, TuneIn, TSN, TVA Sports, whatever. Whatever you have, you can find this and watch it. So check that thing out. It ought to be a lot of fun. The F2 Freestyle. Jeremy Lynch and Billy Wingrove are hosting. All right, let's talk actual Major League Soccer games that count in the standings. I just want to start us in the Eastern Conference because I look at the standings and it's 1 through 8 and it is 7 points. Mm. I mean, it's so tight. Like Toronto FC in 8th can reasonably believe that with 11 games, not only could they get a bye, they might even be able to climb if they were to do like a Seattle-esque thing or a DC-esque thing from last year. They might even be like, who knows? Josuelo and
it's
Omar and
Vito. Pass the eye test, right?
Okay, fine. Who's the best team in the East?
Can we veto Josuelo real quick?
Yeah, I'm okay
with
that.
We let him do Lucharoo. Can we just cut off Josuelo before it starts?
Given also, look how Lucharoo looks like it might end.
That's true.
It might be a curse.
Yeah. I think
fine. You can have Josuelo.
DC United
back.
Fans should actually blame Andrew for that.
That's probably true. Yeah. Who's the best team in the East?
I think it's unquestionably NYCFC right now. 9-2-3 since middle of April. They got Hebert, and like if you look at their points per game when Hebert plays, they're up there like almost at LAFC level. Their goal differential is the best in the Eastern Conference. I think. Their expected goal differential is the best in the Eastern Conference. They have 3 or 4 match winners, depending on what you think of Matriza. They've suffered injuries, midfield, defense, front line, and they've kept going. Like they can play, like they're still much better in the 3-4-3 that really kind of plays as a 3-4-2-1. But they showed when Sands went out, they showed they can still play a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, however, you know, Dome likes to tinker. And the tinkering's working this year. It didn't work last year. I don't think there's an argument for anyone else at this point. I think that NYCFC are I don't want to say head and shoulders because they did just lose to the Red Bulls. But they are pretty clearly the best team. I just spit. Pretty clearly the best team in the Eastern Conference.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying, except the one moment you get where it's they have so many games in hand and they have to catch up is 2 weeks ago when they had a lot of games, including Open Cup, all in a row. They lost all of them, and everything was on Maxi Morales' shoulders for those. They've gotten healthier, but yes, points per game, they're great, but they actually have to play those games now. And they have to play a ton of midweek games with a lot of travel, and you look at them, and then you all of a sudden put it together, and you say, okay, is Matriza a match winner? Because if Maxi Morales isn't in the team, can he get a break? Because he played during the international break because of Open Cup and everyone being gone. He played every single game, 90 to 110 minutes, for the oldest player, basically, who's a central part of their team.
Yeah.
I think for the rest of the team, they have good depth. They have Ibiaga. Keaton Parks has shown he can play. So you can move other pieces around. But it feels like Morales has to be in the team.
Alex Ring is the other one.
Yep.
They need those two guys to stay healthy.
Same thing.
But let
me
ask you this. We all believe that you need an it in the playoffs. You need to be very, very good at one thing. What is NYCFC's? If you were to describe them, what are they good at?
They hit those long diagonals to the overlapping, really, wing backs. It's Tinnerholm on one side and then either Matarita or Sweat on the other side. And by doing that, they make the field wide. And that creates gaps for Hebert, Tate Castellanos when he plays, Matriza, Tajiri Shradi when he plays, was maybe one of the best finishers in the league. Like they just make the field so big, even at Yankee Stadium, that they're just so tough to
defend
against.
That's what I was just about to ask you. You keep talking about making the field big, but at Yankee Stadium in the playoffs, if they're the home team, which they would have to be, obviously, and the favorite, if I'm gonna, I just take away your wingbacks. No, I sit in.
Yep.
I don't give them the room to come forward. I don't give you the big switch, and then what?
It's a good question.
And then what?
I think at that point, you just try to trust the talent.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to.
Fortunately, they have more talent than most teams, attacking-wise especially.
That's the part that I struggled with NYCFC. Patrick Vieira, a well-put-together machine. It was gorgeous to watch how coordinated they were under Vieira. Now under Domi Trent, ironically, it's a little bit more talent-based. Yes, they're very good at clipping the ball wide. After that, it's get the ball into Maxi, get the ball to Ever, get the ball to Matriza, and see what they do, which it works. It's fun to watch, but I'm also okay saying it's a little bit frustrating to see compared to what they were like under Vieira.
What other case can you make here? Like, I look through, and the Union are on top, yeah, but it's feeling a little bit wobbly now.
No one passes the eye test in the East. No one. Every single team.
I think NYCFC does.
Okay.
They're the closest to it.
But they still have to win those games.
They have three losses, by the way. Every other team in the East above the playoff line, minimum is six, and that's DC.
Obscenely played so many less games than everyone else.
Okay, that's fine.
But Red Bulls struggle in the attack and are good defensively. DC has struggles all over the place. So for me, Philly, I think one of the questions is, okay, they don't have one match winner. Everyone needs to pitch in, which is hard because they almost need everyone healthy, which is kind of dangerous because that's very rare to happen. You look at it this weekend. Montero was a huge loss this weekend for them, and they can't have all 11 players healthy all the time. But when they do, I still think that there's an argument that they're the best team in the Eastern Conference right now.
There is.
I'll make two more.
Go for
Toronto. They haven't looked great, but you're still going to tell me in a one-game playoff, you wouldn't take Omar Gonzalez, Michael Bradley, Pasquale. Oh, my God.
You almost
got
went
me.
There.
Pasquale,
it's
Jose Altidore.
No, I mean,
players who have been there
argument.
Before,
like,
they have never lost.
If you're NYCFC and you're at home versus Toronto in the playoffs and you're looking at Jane Sands versus Jose Altidore, you're a little scared, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, this is the thing with young players, that they look great, and, like, James Sands has been damn near flawless this year, but then the bigger test comes, and it's always a question until they ace that bigger test. And I think that's what it's going to have to be for NYCFC, because with guys like Pozuelo, Josie, Omar, Michael Bradley, Jonathan Osorio as well, we've seen them ace that test before, but they don't look good right now.
They do when Josie plays, and they don't when he doesn't.
They didn't even look good against FC Cincinnati this weekend.
Fine. They did what they had to
do. They stalled.
Same with the Red Bulls game. They did what they had to do, but they get early goals or they get ahead. And, yeah, maybe they don't push things, but that's also because you look at the veterans and what do they need to do, right? For guys like Michael and Omar, they know what gets them a win at this point.
I'm not willing to give a team that missed the playoffs last year and is still below the playoff line this year that much credit. I just think they're straight up not playing well, and they need to figure out how to play better over the next couple months.
I was going to add one more team, which helps us transition to the next topic.
Is it going to be Atlanta? Because if it's not, I'm going to question why nobody has said Atlanta.
I was going to say Red Bulls.
No.
Matt, when they played, let's just go through, like, when they played Atlanta, mm-hmm. when they played NYCFC, when they played RSL, when they've been up for these games that mattered to them, when they played FC Dallas.
Wait, why did RSL matter?
I don't know. That was a weird thing. My house was on them. When they played FC Dallas.
You could have just stopped at NYCFC and Atlanta.
Two.
Because that makes the point very well.
That's right. I would put Dallas in that category, but here nor there. But when they've played these big games, these games that matter, that are against good teams, they are still the New York Red Bulls.
But isn't that the case in the regular season? Isn't the entire challenge for them
when those games come
in the postseason?
Well, I think they're an interesting case for the new setup in when it becomes one game. Because they have the best defense. They have the safest.
No, they don't.
I think so in the Eastern Conference.
They have maybe they have the most talented defense, but it hasn't been the best.
Okay, but Aaron Long hasn't been there. Kamara's been out. Tim Parker's been hurt.
Yeah, and that's part of it, man.
But when you put it, Josie's been out all year, and how many injuries have NYCFC?
You know who else was a really big part of that defense last year? Tyler Adams, and they still don't have an answer for that. We're two-thirds of the way into the season, and Mark Schakowsky's still running around out there. What makes you think that's going to improve?
Well, if Christian Casares can actually get healthy, I think he is the starter when healthy. The question is if
Red Bulls fans better hope so.
This whole entire conversation in the East just basically feels like who's hot at the right time. Because there's not a ton separating everybody else. Because I don't know why anybody's not said Atlanta United, given the fact that they were pretty bad to start the year, have rebounded.
4 goals in 9 minutes on Friday night.
Okay, fine. To LAFC.
Yeah.
And might have won this game in another scenario. I know they're not getting the best out of Pity Martinez. I know the locker room's a little bit weird right now. We were down at training this morning, and apparently Pity, Joseph, Gonzalez Perez, Barco, all these guys were like, there are issues with us in the coaching staff. Which you don't have to be like a mind reader to figure out watching this team. But when you look at the level of talent they have, when you look at what they've done in the summer transfer window, which is not big moves, but it's complimentary moves, why not? Why can't Joseph, the best goal scorer in this league, drag this team back to where they were last year? Why can't this backline, which has the ability and the talent, do it? I mean, why not? Why is Atlanta not in this conversation? I don't know why anybody didn't mention
it. The answer is that he can, and they can be. But you asked who the best is. You can't reasonably make an argument that they're the best. Could they win in the playoffs?
You made an argument that Toronto FC are the best.
Yeah, that's fair.
Would the argument be for Atlanta, and what are the issues?
The argument is talent and Joseph and the defense that they saw, that they showed everybody through the first 15 games of the season. The argument against them is they still can't beat the Red Bulls. They are 5-6-1. In their last 12, they had that 5-game winning streak, all shutouts. Since then, they're 5-6-1. They've given up multiple goals in 5 of their last 8 games, including 4 and 12 minutes to LAFC. I think one of the big things is that they don't stretch the field. Everything that happens is so mechanical and so slow. Still, Joseph's the only one who's ever a threat to run in behind, and he doesn't do it that often compared to last year or the year before. And Tito Villalba has been injured basically all year, and when he's not been injured, Frank De Boer doesn't seem to really want to use him. I don't know that they're going to be a good enough possession team, just like ping, 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 but like the Sounders, you know, have done at times, because the Sounders don't stretch the field either. Like, I don't know if they're going to be good enough at doing that to be the best team in the Eastern Conference, especially because their defense isn't as good as it was 2 months ago, and their body language stinks. They're not happy. Nobody on that team looks happy.
They do not.
But to answer your question, they could absolutely still win the East.
They could, but that's one through eight.
What if the two best teams in the Eastern Conference are the Montreal Impact with Piatti back and this new Finnish winger who looked awesome, and then the New England Revolution, two teams we didn't even talk about.
You could
about.
Say the Revs. Still too early, because then you look at their schedule. They've been amazing, but their schedule has been soft. Cincinnati, Vancouver, Colorado, who they just
Orlando this week. In New England, where Orlando basically just like disband themselves.
They beat the teams, that were in front of them. They look good, but the real schedule starts now, and we can maybe have that conversation.
Yeah, look, it's LAFC at Gillette, and then it's at Seattle, at Red Bulls. Yeah, those next three games will tell a story for the Revs. 11 unbeaten so far, and look, Montreal, Lassi Lapalainen, bam, 20-year-old Finnish winger. We'll talk about him in a little bit.
And we didn't even mention DC United.
We didn't.
They've been terrible.
But at the same time, if they make one good move, it could be just like last year.
Is Yamil Asada a good enough move?
I don't think so.
This is the hard part about it. You look at that team. That team demonstrated that they could win the East with those 11 players, with those tactics. So what do? Do you say we're going to wait for it to come back, or do you make that move? Where would they upgrade? Center back at this point?
And the problem is, what happens with Lucho? That's hovering over all of it. That's the dark cloud of uncertainty as to the near and the long-term future for this team. We're waiting for Marc-Anthony Kay. He's getting ready. He will get mic'd up. Yet another point
here. Well, you know what's crazy about that? We talked about this in Mass Confrontation. We were talking about Lucho Acosta going for 7, 8, maybe $10 million last year. Mm-hmm. Then we were saying, what do they re-sign him for? Now it's conceivable that DC United's best option with their team in Lucho Acosta is to let him walk for free.
Yep.
Because it's that. The opportunity cost here is, what, $2 million a year?
Basically $7 million or more probably paid to Lucho out of your pocket as opposed to into your own pocket.
And it might ruin your season if he's on the team. So you might be best off getting him out the door this summer if you have a replacement idea to bring in, because Rooney's got a certain time span on his legs. You knew what you were last year. You knew what you are at the beginning of the season. And you look at the rest of the roster, fullback, winger, center forward, center back. There aren't really a lot of places that need to be upgraded. So if you are going to get better, it's either bringing in depth or it's replacing that one spot because you're not getting the effort or the emphasis and that you were getting from that number 10.
There's a lot of emphasis right now in the Eastern Conference and the fact that it is so packed, as we said, 7 points separating 1 through 8 in the standings right now. Below that, it's kind of wishy-washy. Now, are you going to bet on Orlando City? Probably not. They're 4-6-1 at home. That usually doesn't work out and turn into a playoff team. Columbus, they've won 2 straight games, but still. Chicago Fire, probably not. FC Cincinnati, definitely not at this rate.
But the march.
Yeah, but hey, well, that march was awesome. That march was awesome. And again, I must remind you that they have not done well since I left the city limits. Western Conference, we haven't talked about it in the same sort of terms. But LAFC have 49 points. They're running away with it. They're 11 points ahead of the Sounders. But after that, 2 through 9 is an 8-point gap. Mark Anthony Kay now is ready, so we must make a sub.
We're about to start.
Doyle, your legs. You don't have the legs for this.
Definitely not a 90-minute play.
No. He'll be back, though.
I'm sorry.
Keep
the seat
warm. No,
Mark Anthony, sit down, man. Join us. Join us. Welcome to
Extra Time. So we're asking on the Western Conference, is there actually a great team? What do you think?
Right, outside of...
Outside of us?
Oh, I didn't know if you were going to include it. I didn't want to speak for you.
Wanted to make sure there. So, congratulations on a wonderful season.
Thank you. I appreciate
We debated before you sat down here in the intro to the show how you might describe the early parts of your career with Toronto FC and maybe why it didn't work out for you.
Well, yeah. there's a lot of things I could say, but honestly, I've come to the point now that I'm a little bit mature, and the way I look back at the situation, I honestly think that, you know, a lot of it had to do with me. I think that when I came back on loan from Wilmington, I came back with a little chip on my shoulder, and I think I could have done a little bit better at dealing with the situation. Maybe I looked like I was, you know, conceited or something like that, you know, and I think that they didn't like the way it looked, and that played a big factor in whether or not they kept me on, because it had nothing to do with my talent, right? And but it was a blessing in disguise, because eventually I went to Louisville, and that was where everything kind of changed. My mentality changed. The way I was playing changed, and then I got the opportunity with LAFC, and now I'm here.
Was there an aha moment with that maturity, or was it a process where you were just like, oh, man, maybe I didn't handle this right?
For Wibby, he had a kid. That was his aha.
My aha was not – well, Wibby there was a choice there. But
no, you haven't heard.
You haven't heard about that.
Honestly, I think it was, you know, just the way the journey has been going right now. I think everything has been so positive since I've left TFC. So it's made it easier to accept the fact that it could be me. I think that if I was, you know, maybe still playing in the USL or not without a club, then maybe that's when you play the blame game. But right now, I'd rather take the higher role and just keep going.
Do you think that it would happen for you at anywhere else besides Louisville?
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Like that situation, that setup was what was right.
Yeah,
for you.
That was right. Yeah, it was a battle there, man. It was tough, and the players can talk about it. James, you know James as a coach, and he really had everyone on the right page, fighting for the right thing, and I think that's really what changed everything for me.
What has Bob Bradley done for your game? What's one little thing that he taught you or told you that has helped you get to the next level?
I would say my body positioning when receiving the ball. I think that, you know, when you don't need to fight to get out of situations, it makes the game a lot easier. And for him, he highlighted just body positioning and the right amount of touches to get out of certain situations. And I really focused on that. And there's certain plays that I look back on and I'm like, wow, that looked really easy. It felt easy. You know what I mean?
When you say body positioning, it means that if a defender plays you and you're trying to go toward the goal, you receive it on what's called the front foot, the foot closest to the opponent's goal.
Correct. Exactly. And sometimes you only need 2 touches. Sometimes you need 3 touches. And I think the 3-touch one is the ones that people don't expect. And that's when you're able to actually get out of pressure. But There's times when you need to use it and times not to, and I think that's where I'm at right now in my career, is making sure I can choose the right time, and Bob just makes sure that I pick up on these little details.
Yeah, you do a good job. That's one of the things that's particularly hard to play against you, is you might break the lines with a pass, but you can also dip your shoulder and take that third touch and dribble by them.
Yeah, it's weird, because when I first came to the MLS, I honestly thought that I'm like, okay, I got to pass all the time. And then I remember it was, I think, second game of the season, RSL last year, everyone was blocking passing options, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to dribble. And then I was like, uh-oh, this is not good, because now I'm going to want to dribble a little bit more. So it was a little issue for the coaching staff to be like, okay, you need to, as a better player, you need to understand when to use it and when not to. So.
I remember watching a training session with you guys before the home opener, I think it was, when we were out there for that, and Bob was – he was stopping training regularly, and I remember him mostly talking to you and literally moving your body around. So you have that on-the-field, hands-on aspect.
Yeah.
But he's also a guy who loves tape. We know that. Yeah. Is there a player that he said, look, Mark Anthony, this is your guy. Wait, hit YouTube,
Andrew,
watch
are
this.
Are you Busquets, Xavi, or Iniesta?
Exactly.
It's weird. It's
all three?
It's really weird because sometimes they'll say Busquets, and I'm like, he's like too slow for me. You know what I mean?
So, he's not at the MAK level, guys.
Yeah. Just like, I think I just have a little bit more athleticism than him. So it's like I would have to like kind of take that away out of my game in order to try and play like him, right? So it's, I don't know, out of those three, I would like to take certain things from them, but I don't think I have a specific name yet, you know, so yeah.
So Atuesta, you and Latif, you guys like a squad off the field now?
So me and Latif, actually, we lived in the same building last year, and I drove him to training like every day. So our relationship is really good, and then it's funny, Edward moved into my building now.
That's where it is?
Yeah, so it's weird. It's,
and Latif left, or he stuck around?
No, so I moved. I moved. And then
he's like, let me get that for you.
Who's giving Latif the ride now? What?
I think he goes with Beta now, because they still live in the same area. But yeah, no, we have a really good relationship. It's weird, because Latif is a quiet guy. I'm who I am, and then Edward is a Spanish-speaking player, but like the relationship is just great, and we just love each other, and we work for each other, and the thing is, we'll die out there for each other. Like, if someone goes after Edward, like, I'm gonna go after them, you know
step
what I mean?
Back,
so it's just
what just happened a few times this year.
We've seen that before. So it's good, and the balance, we really complement each other.
You have a club that starts from scratch, and the culture has to start from the same place. And obviously, Bob's done this before many times. He knows how to do it. From the day you walked in and as this built, try to help us and the folks listening or watching here understand how you actually build a culture. Like, what are the things that get done, that happen, the conversations, the actions, whatever it is?
I think, in general, you have to look at another team's culture in order to understand what you want to establish. And from day one, Bob has always talked about Barca and their culture. And I've never watched so much video on them. It's hilarious. I know everything. But I think Bob just set a really high standard from the beginning. And he said, this is where we want to get to. Watch this and see what you can do to get to this level. And after that, we just had an understanding of, okay, we need to play like this. We need to pass like this. We need to press like this. And the culture standpoint of just having a true identity that runs down to your academy. And you look at like our U15s, they're unbelievable. Like I watch these guys in awe, and it's just nice to see that, because they're playing the same way we're playing. And I think that's really what separates you from a mediocre club to being one of the best in the world.
You mentioned with you at Toronto some of the issues you had personally. Have you talked about helping those academy kids come through, or some of the things that maybe you wish you had done differently?
You know, I think right now they're in very good hands, because they're part of a club that's starting off fresh, right? Some of the situations that I face, I don't think they're going to be in yet, because they're only 15. And it's really when you're trying to break into that first team, that's when you see players either excel or drop off. And I think that with the way they're playing right now, I think in 6 years they could all be on the first team. And why wouldn't you want to have that? If you can afford to do that and you have talented players who can play at this level, that'd be a dream come true for an MLS team, because then you could sell every player. Every player you could sell. And then, so it's exciting to see where they're going to be in.
You have the young kids. You have Carlos Vela, who, I mean, just shrug your shoulders at this
guy
sometimes.
Can I stop him?
Yeah. Does anyone
who's
do
the
well
best
in
matchup?
Training?
Who's the best matchup in training? If you're like, all right, somebody's got to shut this guy down. Second team, first team.
You got to put like maybe three guys on him. That's a matchup.
Eddie Walker and you.
Yeah, exactly. But Carlos, he's very deceiving, but we know how he plays. So we kind of step off of him in training. I think when people are a little too arrogant in the way they defend, that's when he can hurt you.
When they get too tight.
Yes, you got to be a little honest and understand that he's a very good player. Respect him. If you don't respect him, then he burns you. So
what does Rossi do that we don't notice?
In training?
Anytime. And in the games?
I don't know. He runs a lot. A lot of sprints, man. His high speed and running is ridiculous. So, but he's a very good player in the way he opens up his body. He's always an option to go in behind, which is great because that really threatens a back line. And he's able to cut in now, and I think he's doing a better job of really being dangerous coming inside, and then that's how he scores a lot of his goals.
So we talk about Rossi, and I think you're in this category too. Your career, you know, it's on the rise. You're doing awesome. Maybe there's a next step. Mm-hmm. I just want to know logistically for you, what is it like? Does your agent call you saying these scouts are watching you? Maybe your price tag is this. Mm-hmm. What is your day-to-day life in, on that front?
Yeah, obviously I talk to my agent. You know, I try to focus on the now because I think if you focus too much about what could be or what can be, then that's when you get distracted and your game falls off a little bit. And that's the part of being a pro. You need to understand how to deal with that. But, yeah, you know, I think with the way LAFC is going right now, a lot of us have opportunities that could come our way, and it's just whether or not it's the right time for the club and the player. But we all have aspirations to play at the highest level, so don't be surprised if things happen, you know.
Transfer news. Get that. Simon, get the report ready.
The window is open. Don't be surprised, folks. Headline right there. News. Can I just ask you about Canada?
Because yes,
we loved watching you guys this summer, and obviously Haiti was an incredible story. Mm-hmm. But man, it was like a bummer on a lot of fronts to see this young, explosive team that had been kind of in the doldrums for a while take this big step forward, and then just kind of right as they were about to launch, not quite make it.
Yeah. No. It's an exciting time for Canada. We have a lot of young, talented players. Like, obviously, Alphonso Davies, but I think Jonathan David needs to get a little bit more of the headlines because that guy is unbelievable. And I think that, we're going in the right direction, and we got a good core group of players who are in the right time of their career right now. So, obviously, it was unfortunate the way we went out in the Gold Cup, but I think that we turned a lot of heads in our performances. I think that, obviously, we need to shore up on the defensive side of the game. It's not a secret or anything, but that's going to be a team effort, you know what I mean? Like, you look at the way we play with LAFC, everyone defends, and I think if we can establish that kind of understanding within the players, then it makes it easier on the back four instead of leaving them stranded, right? And yeah, you know, like I said, there's a lot of positives, but it was unfortunate the way we went out.
What changed? Like, have you felt something changing over the past 5-6 years? Like, what was the switch?
Honestly, I just think it's timing. I think it's the timing of the players within the team who are getting meaningful minutes in their clubs, and then obviously finding these young gems who are now playing in Europe. So the biggest thing, I think, is we have to give praise to the players because they're the ones who have been fighting to put themselves in the best position. And yes, John has come in with a clear idea of what he wants to do, but at the end of the day, my praise goes to the players because we're doing the hardest we can do to make sure we're ready for the opportunity.
What position is your spot on Canada? Center midfield, left back, center back?
Honestly, I don't know. I have no clue. You know, I always wanted to be a versatile player, and I think the fact that I came into the MLS and I'm having a good run playing center mid, it's changed the way I think about being versatile now. But, if I have to play left back, then I'll play left back. But obviously, I want to be that guy in the center midfield controlling a game.
You have a pretty interesting opponent coming up this week with the MLS All-Stars, Atletico Madrid, Diego Simeone.
You've seen all the tape against Barca.
Barca makes it look easy. Yeah. So
this is a cakewalk, right? Yeah. Who's the guy that you're like, oh, man, I really just, you know, 50-50 comes with this guy. I'm going to relish that just standing across from him.
I would say Koke. Yeah, he's a very good player. Solid center mid, you know, has range, can pass, can dribble. Defensively, he's good too. So that's someone, you know, obviously they have the big stars on the team, but I can't relate to them. So I gotta be more honest and see a player who plays in my position and go from there.
I like the Ace, CONCACAF battle in the midfield as well. Before I let you go, thank you for joining us, Mark Anthony.
Thank you, guys.
Between you and Bob Bradley in the weight room, I'm going to put like five different exercises.
Okay.
Who's going to be the strongest in all five? Because I see Bob after training.
Yeah, yo, he's an animal.
he's crushing it.
He's an animal, man. He's For his age, he is really fit. He's done a great job. So
give the bomber jacket a grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah. Eight. How's his fashion?
Does he have a jacket guy?
I don't know.
Definitely got a, he knows a guy.
Honestly, like, I try not to comment on it, but, like, his style is, like, very good for his age. Like, he's done well.
A lot of age talk. Right
I just wanted, before we let Mark Anthony go, I just want to say that I saw you wearing an Adidas shirt that I went and then bought, and now I can't wear it because I just... I don't look as cool.
Yeah.
It's a really tough moment for me personally.
That?
It's like blue with pink stripes.
It's pretty cool.
You're rocking it well, man.
Yeah,
you're doing well. Thank you for joining us.
Photo shoot.
I know. I feel bad about it, but I had to bring it up just to shame myself. Mark Anthony Kay, killing it for LAFC in Canada. Thanks for joining us. We're now going to go to Bobby's interview with Edwin Cerrillo and Cole Bassett of the homegrown team.
Cole. Edwin, welcome to Extra Time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Cole, happy birthday.
Thank you.
What does an 18-year-old do for his birthday?
Travel on a plane from San Jose to Orlando, 5.5-hour flight. Not very fun.
You want to know what I want to know about you guys is when you meet new people and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to the movies, you know, come hang out with our friends. What do you tell them?
I tell them I got practice the next day. I want to rest for the most part.
Depends how late it is.
Yeah, like it depends on the day of the week. If we have an off day the next day, then sure. But for the most part, it's kind of just chill for me. Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about what it's like in your first year as a pro. Cole, I know you signed last year, but you're still young. What's one thing that you didn't expect about being a professional? Because you hear all these things about the dream becoming the reality and it's this incredible job. But what's one thing that you didn't expect about this profession?
Probably the mental side of the game. It's a lot tougher than you'd think. Like you think you're going to step into the team right away, you sign, and then you think you're going to play. And even when you are playing, you have to prove it every single day in training. So there's a chance that you can get taken out, and that's been tough for me, especially a lot of games this season I've been taken out in like the 70th minute, and I feel like I'm doing good, but it's just a tactical decision, and you kind of got to take that mentally and move on and try to go back into training the next week and earn your spot again.
I remember that was exactly the hardest part, because as a youth player for my age group, as a college player, you're always the star of the team. You played every minute. It was all about you, and then you turn pro, and you're no longer the star because you got DPs coming in.
Yeah.
It's like you kind of like start all over again to work your way in, and just how competitive everyone is, because everything is live or die every day. And I think that's one part that was pretty surprising, but I've adapted pretty well.
So what do you do? How do you adjust? Do you talk to someone? Are there older players that help you with it? Who's helped work you through it?
For me, it's been Tim Howard and Giles Barnes last year helped me a lot. When I first came into the team, they kind of took me under their wing and kind of showed me the ropes. And they have experience in the Premier League as well, so that was good for me because that's obviously one of the best leagues, if not the best in the world. So to learn from those two was big for me. And then now this season, Kai Kamara has kind of took me under his wing, especially being the 10 right underneath him, trying to form a good partnership. So it's been nice learning from him. I really appreciate like a lot of the things that he tells me, and I've learned a lot from him. So it's been pretty good so far.
And for us, I mean, you know, we have a lot of homegrowns on the team. And when I joined, the big player was Victor Ulloa getting significant minutes. So when I started going and training with the first team, him and Moises Hernandez and a bunch of the younger veterans, I guess you could say, would give me advice on just working and trying to improve my game, but also just that mental toughness to compete, because they know they were going through what I was going through. So just giving me advice and just taking it and trying to take the next step.
And what's been the part of your game on the field, your skill set, that's grown the most since you've joined the first team?
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, my defensive side still has a lot to work on, but I've had to play a fair amount of games as a wide midfielder. So going up against guys like last year, I remember my first start, I had to go up against Quintero out wide, and I got schooled a couple of times. But my 1v1 defending, I feel like, has gotten a lot better than it was. And I still have a lot to improve, though, because my tackling ability still needs to get better. But definitely the defensive side of the game is what I think is improved.
What about the defensive side of the game? When you say that, what does that mean?
Probably the positioning that I'm starting in, because a lot of the time, if you're not in the right positioning to close, like get pressure on the ball, because in the academy, we could afford time, like give time to the guys that we're playing against, like because we knew they can't pick a pass that's going to hurt our team. But when you have guys like Maxi Morales, Pozuelo dropping in, Valeri to pick up the ball in the midfield, we got to get out and step to them so that they don't have time on the ball. So trying to get your positioning right so you can do not one job but kind of two jobs and kind of cover lots of space.
Is there a little detail? I mean, people love getting behind the curtain with players. What's a little detail to that? Is it checking your shoulders, spacing? Do you have a little tidbit you could share?
I mean, the center, the defense helps out a lot. I mean, if they're they're communicating to you and talking shoulder, you kind of want to be in the half spaces. Like for us, Connor has been telling me this little triangle in between three players, try to find that as a wide midfielder because you can step to the outside back. You can go to the center back if you can read that, and then also help inside with the center mid.
And for me, I think the mental part of it, just the speed of play, like you said, in the academy, you have so much time on the ball and everything's a bit easier, I guess. And I'm a player who likes to be calm, and I just play my game, try to play simple, but try to have that swagger. And I think when I started coming into the first team, I try to play that way. And then you have guys like Gresso coming in and like from the side and like stealing the ball away from you and like putting you on the ground. So I think that's where I've improved the most.
What is your favorite part about being a pro? We talked about the part that surprised you, but what's your favorite part about being a first teamer?
Just getting, like, playing the game every single day and actually getting to train year round in a competitive environment. Because with the academy, we did have a fair amount of off time, and during that off time, you don't really get that competitive training every single day. Whereas here, there's even in the off season, we have competitive training that we go to and play pickup games that are pretty competitive. So probably that. I mean, it's just so many touches on the ball, just getting better every single day and trying to improve as players to reach our potential.
Yeah, and besides playing soccer every day, like Cole said, for me, just being in our home stadium and when we score and you hear all the fans chanting, that's a feeling I can never explain, and it's just one that I always look forward to, and I think that's the best feeling that I get.
So this is my big question for you guys, and it's something that I care about often. What separates you guys? You know, we've had a lot of young, good domestic players. Why is it going to be you two that succeed in the end, that end up on the national team at the World Cup, you know, playing for Real Madrid one day?
I think for me and Cole, I think we're similar in the aspect that we were never a top prospect or never on the national team. And I think we both have that same quality of always working hard and just pushing each day and trying to prove that we belong. And I think that's why we've been getting minutes so far.
I mean, I agree with him. I feel like when we were younger kids, we kind of got underlooked a bit, and we still have a lot to prove. We still have a lot to work on in our games, but we've always been the guys that, like, we first just got our first call-ups to the national team this year, and most guys got it when they were 13 or 14. So it's that mentality side that I think we both have, that we want to improve every single day, and we know we have high, lofty goals, especially playing for the national team. I bet Edwin has the same dream playing for them. And even though it could seem like a long ways away, if you trust in yourself and believe and try to keep that mental side strong, then you can get there.
I like that answer because in our group chat, we have a list, you know, a mental list and one we refer back to on the top prospects, right? Every team's top most likely players to go big. You guys weren't necessarily on it, right? So you see breakthrough and you both do really well with the first team. Has been fun to see players grow and continue to get better.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think I like surprising people. I don't. Yeah. Some players get overhyped and don't live up to it, but I think being underlooked could help you in a way to just stay humble and keep working hard and always trying to play with that chip on your shoulder to prove yourself.
All right. Yeah. After practice, what's your go-to drill? Everyone else has left the field. What do you guys like to do when you're on your own?
For me, it depends on the day because our trainer is pretty picky about what I do after training.
Hate that, right, man.
Yeah.
Hate that.
I'll call him out right here, Chad. he annoys me sometimes. But
Chad, let the kids play.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But probably, I mean, I've been trying to become kind of a Frank Lampard-esque midfielder, arriving late and scoring in the box. So trying to work on my shots from distance as well as timing my runs into the box. And then also if it's kind of a lighter day like Friday, just working on my long balls, trying to, in the academy, I could loft them in every single time, but now you really got to drive them and hit them in there.
Yeah. Just recently with Peter,
Peter Lucen, your assistant coach,
yes,
formerly of Deportivo La Coruña, among other clubs in Europe.
Yeah. Great player. And, obviously now a great coach. And just recently, with all the midfielders, we've been working on our long-range shooting that really needs to improve. So that's our pretty much go-to drill right now. But besides that, just after training, playing with Jesus Thomas, just a juggling game or whatever, just to have fun.
I love that because we have the skills challenge coming up tomorrow night, Tuesday night. And I tell people that is what players do after practice, right? It's just it's in front of the stands. It's going to be on TV, but that's what players do. They clip balls in. They take volleys. They do passing competitions. And that That's probably the part I miss the most about playing. So I'm glad to hear you enjoy that.
Yeah, it makes it feel like kids again, just having fun.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And you can see it in games. You take that little touch and you can say, that's not something you do in a drill. You can only learn that touch by playing with your friends after practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's where you develop most of your skills, to be honest. Like, I remember when we were younger, like 13 or 14, that the after practice is kind of what made us get better as young players, because you don't get all that in a practice. You're kind of doing what the coach wants you to do. Like, he's running the session, but after training, it's kind of what you want to do, what you feel you need to work on. So that's when you can kind of develop your game.
Yeah. And Edwin, you're going to be the captain for the homegrown game presented by Energizer. What are you going to do to win? Because I don't want to see you guys just go out and play well. I saw that last year against Tigres. What are you going to do to make sure your team wins?
No, well, first of all, I want to be a leader by example as well. Just to work really hard to do anything for my team and try to bring up our players. And I know we have a short time together to just to learn how each of us play, but I think I'm going to send a message to my teammates that we need to go out there not only to compete but to win, and send a message to everyone that us guys here at MLS can compete with other teams around the world.
Awesome. Love that. Edwin Cirio, Cole Bassett, thank you so much for joining Extra Time.
Yeah, thank you. Of course.
All right, we got more interviews coming for you later this week on Thursday. Let's see, Graham Zusi will be here, Chris Wondolowski will be here, and Walker Zimmerman from LAFC will be as well. So tune into that show. We'll be doing it late night on Wednesday. You'll get all the reaction from All-Star on Thursday. And, of course, subscribe to Extra Time wherever you listen to podcasts. We're going to talk about the Western Conference, but we kind of used that time on Mark Anthony.
Wait. Bobby, you asked Mark Anthony Kay what Bob Bradley has helped him with the most. Mm-hmm. And he said body positioning when receiving the ball, mm-hmm. in particular. He focused on that one thing. Mm-hmm. When you were in MLS...
Zero.
How many MLS teams... how many MLS teams have dedicated coaches or part of the staff for things like that? Which is a huge thing.
Right. We talk about this often. It's one of the weird things about soccer that... you have a goalkeeper coach, and if you go to football, football has a wide receiver coach, a linebacker's coach, offensive lineman. Soccer has a goalkeeper, and then a first-team coach, an assistant coach, and that's it, right? There's no specific training. A striker misses a shot in training, what do they say to him? Get over the ball. Like, what does that even mean, right? There's no talk about balance, the surface of your foot. So, yeah, Matt, the answer is zero. Even now, there's no dedicated position coaches. I would argue that what makes LAFC so good is that Bob Bradley is one of the few coaches in this league who talks about every single detail. Every time you get the ball, every time you do every action, there is a right thing to do. It's none of this idea of figure it out. It's none of this idea of it's a fluid game. No, there's a right answer. Bob Bradley makes sure you know the right answer and you do the right answer.
Although, it was interesting to hear Mark Anthony Kay say against RSL last year, he thought he had to play one way, and then it came out differently, and he did figure it out on the field.
It was early in the process, right?
Oh,
that's my answer to that. That's
no,
if they would have gotten there.
And like, that's an important part of understanding it, is that it is always going to be a process. Like, it's even a process for Barcelona to play how they want to play. No, it absolutely is. But like, yeah, the idea, it bothers me that so often we see players, and we see them two or three times, and we only talk about their shortcomings and not their potential, not what they need to work on, not how they can go up a level or two levels or five levels, which is essentially what Mark Anthony Kay did and what we're hoping to see from Edwin Cirio and Cole Bassett. It's something that Lucci teaches. Lucci is one of those coaches who absolutely works on the finer points as well.
Yeah, look, I'd like to see more Mark Anthony Kays in this league, just period. Guys that improve year over year, that realize potential that was there that hadn't been before. Let's jump into a team that's starting from a blank slate real quick. Inter Miami has their first signings, 19-year-old Argentines, Matias Pellegrini and Julian Carranza. Pellegrini rumored $10 million fee, a young DP, Carranza TAM, but probably a multi-million dollar fee for him as well. Carranza has about 10 goals in 30 matches for Banfield, and Pellegrini is with Estudiantes, 3 goals in the Super League last season. Both of them have been Argentina youth internationals. So what do we make of these signings? They kind of went under the radar a little bit.
A little bit. Go ahead.
Well, they're not names that people already know, right? But this is what Paul McDonough has done well his whole career, is go find talent in South and Central America, and he has an idea of how he's built basically two teams already in Orlando and Atlanta, what worked and what he wants to do. And he went out and found the talent he wanted. And like we've seen, he's going to loan them back and they'll be ready to come in when it starts. And it's going to start helping the framework of the team he builds. But a young DP barely hits your cap. and it's a guy who you probably can sell on in the future. So from a business point of view, it's a genius way to go about starting your team. And the other thing is two young players. It's South Florida. It's going to be 100 degrees and humid all the time. And he knows that. He's helped build a team in Orlando. And you kind of start to see it like it was Brian Roches. And this is the Inter-Miami on steroids version of Brian Roches.
Well, yeah. Well, he went and got, helped get Almirón Rowan as well. And went and got Vialba. And
Barco.
So kind of understands some of that market as well. Now, there is risk. You know, the cap side is one thing.
Yep.
$10 million is another thing. We've seen a number of young South Americans come to this league and not work out.
Yeah.
Pablo Aranguiz just got sent back to Chile by FC Dallas.
Josue Coleman.
Yeah. So there is significant risk here. McDonough did say that he wants to have as many as 8 players by September. So you're going to see, you would think, a flurry of activity.
Andrew, to add to that, Miguel Marrone had almost 90 first-team appearances for Lanús and Soto Porteño.
And he had moved countries.
That's right. Matias Pellegrino, 17 first-team. Yeah. It's basically the same as Ezekiel. These are guys who basically had one half season to start at. Barco was the same way. We think of Barco as being a big signing, and he was. But he only had like one half a season as a first-team professional starter before they spent all that money. It's the same thing here. Clearly, you need to get on it early if you want an affordable price, but it's still a risk. I mean, we see it all the time. Players in MLS who have a good half season and then peter off.
Or you can invest in a coach who will coach those players up.
Of course.
Make sure they improve upon both their strengths and their weaknesses.
Yeah, that would be good. Hey, Miguel Marrone costs less than $10 million, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty good deal.
If you look at the recent transfers of South American players, guys who were like 23 to 25, 26 years old, all tended to be, not all, but like mostly tended to be successes. Almirón being the biggest success.
Brian Fernandez, the most recent and obvious problem.
Right.
Yep.
Whereas guys 21 and under, it's much more miss than hit. I would say that over the last couple of years, the only unquestionable success was Milton Valenzuela for Columbus. And it's a shame that he got hurt this year because I think he would have been one of the best fullbacks in the league.
Diego Rossi. Arthur came when he was under 21.
Sorry, Rossi is the other one.
Arthur came when he was under, right? Played in 2016.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So I was talking the last couple of years. So since the start of 2018, guys who were South Americans who were 21 or less and came, or under and came to MLS, Barco, not a success.
TBD. Jose, we'll say TBD.
Yeah, TBD. Jose Hernandez, not a success. Milton Valenzuela, that's a success. Pablo Aranguiz, I'm willing to call that a failure.
Yep, I think
Ronaldo
so.
Pena, not
somewhere
yet
middle ground, but he's behind Minotas. You know,
Diego
TBD.
Rossi, unquestionably a success. Jason Vargas, failure.
Yep.
Jesus Medina, trending in the wrong direction. Christian Caceres, I think he will eventually work out. Josue Coleman, definitely not a success. And then Thomas Konecny.
Who they just signed permanently.
Would you include Yongel Herrera on that list? Or no, because it's not a permanent signing?
Too long ago.
I'm saying just for the last 18 months. Because like after Herrera's success in 2017, it felt like the floodgates opened and more MLS teams were like, oh, let's look for South Americans. And like I'm happy about that. I want us to be the best league in the Americas, and I think this is a good way to get there. But all of the Remember Twellman's rant to DC United about Wayne Rooney? It's like, if you get him, you have to have, it's on you to have everything in order, to have all your ducks in a row. That applies even more to young players. Because Wayne Rooney is coming here completely, fully fleshed out soccer player, whereas a 19-year-old kid, no matter how good he is, changing countries, like you have to have the process in place to improve these guys.
I didn't know Doyle was going
to
say,
I talked to one of those clubs, I spoke to their team president, they're like, yeah, he came over and we gave him an apartment and that's it. And they're like, we learned that lesson. We know we have to give them a translator. We have to help them shop. We have to help them acclimate. So hopefully clubs are getting better.
By the way, DC United still need to help out Wayne Rooney a little bit.
Yeah,
we'll talk more about the transfer window as it continues on. We want to know who you think has been the biggest and best transfer. There's not a ton of candidates, although go back, Lassi Lapalainen, boom, Cam Lone, 2 goals, knock off Philly. That's
also
been a good one so far.
All the ones that have come in have been good.
Bo Fernandez, hasn't been a big one yet. Maybe Christian Pavone
Fernandez
comes in.
20 goals this
Fernandez
year.
Fernandez was the previous transfer window, though. Fernandez and Pozuelo were the spring window. Yeah.
Well.
Sorry, guys.
Specifics, bummer.
Yeah.
Bummer. Do we have the best mail? We'll do the rest on Thursday.
We have some great mail. It's hard to tell because Bobby's cool, so he didn't bring a computer in.
Right,
and
he's been taking yours
the entire time. Perry in Portland wants a little bit of a consulting fee because he was the one who advised you to go to Portland for that triple header weekend, right? It's T2, Thorns, and Timbers.
And I'm missing that. I'm missing T2.
Yeah, of course you are because you don't care about the young players.
I love young players.
He's
going to
go see University of Portland instead.
Go Pilots. Ooh,
Travis in Omaha said Bill Hamid came out before the season and said he's better than Brad Guzan. Right now, is that true?
Yeah. Ooh,
good question.
Yeah, that is.
Brad Guzan's had a struggle this year.
But it's been more recent, right? Is it more form or is it more who he is as a goalkeeper?
Well, that's a good question.
Because the beginning was pretty good. I know they weren't giving up a ton of chances, but you do have to give the goalkeeper at least some credit for the organizational side there. So Bobby's biting his lip, I think.
Say it.
I got nothing to say.
You're literally biting your lip.
I have opinions on goalkeepers, but they're just so hard to judge.
You're an expert.
So I try.
Yeah, you just got back from Germany.
That's true. I am. That's true.
Oh, yeah?
I don't have a strong opinion. Carry on.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, nothing.
I miss the days when we weren't on video and I could do things like bite my lip.
Right.
The last one is basically this, which is we talked on the last episode that LAFC needed something across from Carlos Vela, maybe, or a different attacker to help change things up. There's this available player. Matt from Red Bull Arena says his name is Gareth Bale or Bale.
Did Matt see what is on the table? Did Matt see the offer on the table?
No.
$1 million a week.
But it's gone now. It doesn't matter.
But he still makes $500,000 already.
Whatever it is.
I think Gareth Bale would be magnificent in Los Angeles.
Do you think he fit on any MLS team?
Could he play for LAFC? I mean, he is Real Madrid.
Yeah, that's
and they
true.
Are Barca.
That's a really good point.
So it's like, you know, it's like.
And I remember Danny Alves talking about Bale when Madrid bought him, and he said, yeah, I mean, he's a nice player, but if he played for us, he'd be a left back. He wouldn't be an attacker.
He was a left back as a kid.
He was.
He grew up as a left back at Southampton early at Tottenham.
Harry Redknapp thought he was a left
back. All right, we have obviously come full circle. Gareth Bale, the left back for LAFC, 401-206-0 MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We will dedicate a lot more time to the mailbag on Thursday and also talk to Graham Zusi, Walker Zimmerman, Chris Wondolowski, wrap up the All-Star game with Charlie Davies. Remember to watch on Wednesday. You can also watch the homegrown game and skills challenge on Tuesday and follow all the coverage of all the festivities on MLS channels. We're going to get out of here. Enjoy your weekend. The week.
Yeah,
it feels like a weekend.
It's only Monday, right?
It feels like a weekend. I'm just saying. Enjoy whatever it is you're doing this week, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday.
I didn't think that was that funny, David. Jeez.
I missed the 90-minute shows, guys.
It was funny the way you said it.